are some seriously terrible and unedifying stories in the Bible. Just a few examples from the book of Psalms. We're all familiar with Psalm 137, that psalm that was written in the context of the Hebrew people living in captivity in Babylon. And we all know the first verse: by the rivers of Babylon we sat down and wept when we remembered Zion. But the last verse, not so familiar, says this: happy are those who take the children of our captors and beat them against the rocks. Or in the book of Judges, Jephthah leads the armies of Israel against the Ammonites, and he does a deal with God beforehand. If God, you will ensure a victory, when I get back home, whoever comes out of the house first, I will offer as a burnt offering to the Lord. Israelites under Jephthah defeat the Ammonites. Jephthah goes home to Mizpah. The first person out of the house is his daughter. And in order to keep his vow, he kills her. And then in the book of Kings, we are told a story about the prophet Elisha. Elisha is walking from Jericho to Bethel. Some boys come out and taunt him and say, "Away you go, bald head." Elisha, we're told, curses the boys. Two she-bears come out of the woods and they tear 42 of the boys to pieces just for calling him baldy. And then we have the story we read from Genesis a few minutes ago. God tells Abraham, according to the story, to take his only son Isaac and offer him as a sacrifice to God. If somebody today came along and said to us, "God has told me to sacrifice my son by murdering him," we would assume rightly that he had serious mental health problems. This is a very unedifying story on the face of it. So what are we to do with it? Well, you've been listening to sermons long enough to know that ministers don't ask questions they don't think they can answer. So let me try and answer that for you. The first thing that is the key to the story is the opening sentence where it says, Abraham was tested by God. This is a story about faith being tested. And it's one of many occasions in the Bible where we find that experience, people's faith being tested. So the children of Israel are led through the wilderness to be tested by God, to see if they will remain faithful to God. During what we call the exile, when they were in captivity in Babylon, they are being tested to see if they will hold on to their faith, even when every pin of faith has been taken away from them. Jesus tested in the wilderness, tested in Gethsemane. Peter tested in the garden in the high priest's courtyard. Faith tested is a consistent theme in the Bible. The end of the story says that now God knows Abraham feared the Lord. Fear not in the sense of being awestruck or being frightened, but fear in the sense of obey. That's normally what fear means in the Bible. The motto of the University of Aberdeen, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Obedience to God is how you find wisdom. So this is a story about faith being tested and about the obedience of a man of faith. The second key to the story is not to import modern understandings of childhood and children into an ancient story. The people of first century had a completely different attitude to children to that which we have today. One commentator says, whereas today, children, we have a high estimate of children bordering on sentimentality, the ancients had a low estimate of children bordering on cruelty. So if you had an unwanted child, you simply took him out onto the hillside and left him to die. What this story is about is God testing Abraham to see if Abraham will hold on to faith even when his most precious possession is being asked of him, his only son. And Abraham keeps faith. He is obedient to God. And so he becomes in the New Testament, in Paul's letter to the Romans particularly, he becomes the great exemplar of what faith is. Faith that is tested, but faith which is held on to, and faith which is proven in the fires of testing. And obviously this leads us to think today about how our faith is tested, because we know well the experience of the testing of faith. Let me suggest there are four things today that test faith particularly. One is personal experience of tragedy, accident, or suffering. At the moment on BBC just now, there is a drama series starring Sean Bean as a Roman Catholic priest in a rundown parish in England. It's called Broken, and I hope some of you have seen it and may even be following it. Because one of the themes in that series is the testing of faith. The parish priest finds his faith tested continually by the plight of his parishioners and by attitudes of his church that he doesn't agree with. One of the main characters is a black woman called Helen. She has a son who has serious learning difficulties, a 17-year-old boy called Vernon. In an instant, he is shot and killed by the police, who lie to cover up what happened. And Helen's trust, Helen's faith in the system, in the church, in God, is tested by this experience. And we can all identify with that. We can all identify the times we have questioned God and argued with God over hard personal experience, which leads many people to give up on God and abandon faith altogether. A second thing which tests faith, I think, is the way the world is. When I retired, I went to help the minister at South Holborn with some of his pastoral work. They gave me a fancy title. They called me the pastoral assistant. And my life in that role is spent visiting elderly people. And the most common thing they say to me is, "It's a terrible world we're living in, Mr. Brown." And I say, I think it's probably the same world that we've always lived in, except now we are subjected to 24-hour rolling news where we see the horrors repeated and repeated and repeated so that you could easily become depressed. And you begin to wonder, we believe this is God's world. But look at what's happening in God's world. We solved the problem of Rwanda, then of the Balkans, but then there was Iraq, then there was Libya, now there's Syria. What's God doing about it? Michael Taylor, 15, 20 years ago, was director of Christian Aid in the UK. And after 10 years, he gave up. And he said, the world's got worse instead of better, despite all our efforts in Christian Aid. The world and its condition had defeated him and defeated his faith. And I think that is true for many people. If this is God's world, what's he doing about it? About the condition of so many people in it. A third thing, I think, which tests our faith is what I call bad religion. Every story about an abusive priest, every story about an ISIS terrorist who thinks he's going to heaven by murdering people, every story about a Christian leader who is anxious to nuke another country, all these things test our faith and undermine what we believe. And if you were to ask me, the statistics this week come out and say the Church of Scotland has lost more ground than any other believing community in the last few years. If you ask me why, one of the reasons I think is because people look on at us and say, who would want to belong to a system where women are not treated equally with men, or gay people are not treated equally with heterosexual people? For anybody under 30 or 40, the gay issue is not an issue. They wonder what you're arguing about. And that undermines faith. Every hotel wedding, every humanist funeral undermines our faith and challenges it. And many people cannot cope and they abandon faith altogether. And the last thing, I think, is simply the decline of the church. Unless you are very different from anywhere else I go, your children and your grandchildren will not be in church. And that tests our faith, because they seem to live very well without faith. They don't seem to need God. And that is a challenge to our faith and a test of what we believe. It's something to do, I think, with the unthought-out assumption that science has explained faith away, that science can prove things, but faith can't. Which is, of course, nonsense. One of the great mysteries of my life is that Richard Dawkins has become a hero for his book, The God Delusion, which is worth a read, I have to say, because it raises issues for us. And Dawkins may well be a very accomplished scientist, I'm not qualified to judge, but he is theologically illiterate. He has not a clue. And in his book and in his television series, he interviewed some of the most outrageous nutters you could ever find in the religious world and holds them up as the norm. You would think any responsible critic of the church would go to the most intelligent people, like Rowan Williams, for example, or read some modern theology, but not Dawkins. And yet people have been seduced by that. There is a kind of a grace of atheism out there. And they look to Dawkins and the God delusion as their Bible. All these things undermine faith, and all these things test our faith and make it more difficult to hold on to faith. Our own personal experience where God seems absent, the world we look out on which God sometimes seems to have abandoned, the terrible things that are done in the name of religion and in the Christian religion, and the fact that so many people have deserted the cause. All these things test our faith. And the solution? There is no easy solution. The solution, as I understand it, is that we use our intelligence as we read the Bible. We worship faithfully with other people who believe. We expose ourselves to the songs and the stories and the hymns and the prayers of faith in the company of other people, because we need other people in order to maintain our own faith in these days of small things. Paul calls Jesus the yes to all God's promises. And to hold on to that conviction, we need each other. We need the worship week by week. We need the prayers and the stories and the songs. And we hope that things will turn.